Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Best of Wrestling Observer Live here on WrestlingObserver.com, your weekly look back at the interviews that were on Wrestling Observer Live from the previous week. My name is Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcast for the website. Wishing everyone a happy Easter weekend. Of course, if you don't celebrate Easter, we'll just call it a happy pre-WrestleMania Sunday weekend. How about that? Coming up on this edition of the show, we have Dave Meltzer from Thursday's edition talking about the somewhat failed Ronda Rousey ESPN interviews from earlier this week, whether or not he thinks Randy Orton should be in the WWE Hall of Fame, and also the relationship between Hulk Hogan and WWE, and whether Hogan could come back to the organization. Of course, he was at the Andre the Giant documentary premiere earlier this week, so that question was raised again. We then transitioned to Josh Matthews of Impact Wrestling. Shorter segment, because we couldn't get a hold of him earlier. He was, he was on the phone with Twitch, which he actually talked about on the show. So we talked about the Impact's relationship with Twitch, the big show coming up this week, the Impact versus Lucha Underground show during WrestleMania weekend, and all types of other stuff as well. So decent little interview there. And then we go to Friday. We talk to the one and only Dr. Lucha, Steve Sims, about obviously Lucha and Mexican wrestling and everything that's going on there. And then transition finally to Brody King. Brody King, a independent wrestler doing a lot of dates and so on, also in a band. So we talked to him all about that. So again, on this edition of the show, we start with Dave Meltzer, Josh Matthews, Steve Sims, and closed out with Brody King. If you're not familiar with Wrestling Observer Live, of course, you can listen to it every Monday through Friday and Sundays on a variety of ways. You can obviously go to our website, WrestlingObserver.com, when the show airs live, 3 p.m. Eastern and noon Pacific and on Monday through Friday, and then 6 p.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. Pacific on Sundays for a special two-hour edition of the show, of course, starring Brian Alvarez, Mike Sempervivi, and the occasional guest host, you know, handsome guy known as me. So, without further ado, let's get this edition of the Best of Wrestling Observer Live. Have a great weekend and get ready for WrestleMania week. Enjoy.
Back on the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. No Mike Sempervivi today, but Dave Meltzer is joining us here. We got a lot to talk about here today. And last night, Wrestling Observer Radio, we talked about all of the news. However, what we did not talk about last night, we'll start with today, which is Ronda Rousey on ESPN, Dave. What did you make of her performance, so to speak?
I don't think his performance was particularly good, to say the least. I mean, when you go on shows like that, you should be ready for any kind of questions, and certainly about her MMA career would probably be exactly what they're going to ask about. She's on a sports show on ESPN, and she just seemed so mad about questions. And I grant you that Max Kellerman, the way he came off, I mean, it was interesting to me. It was this weird thing of like, well, I don't think that you're overrated, and I think you did great things, but other people, you know, will say, you know, you're overrated and, you know, things like that. So that was kind of a weird, if you don't think she's overrated, then don't waste your time asking the question. To me, it's like if I was to interview Ronda Rousey, I certainly wouldn't throw in, oh, by the way, there's all kinds of idiots who've been wanting you to fail, and finally after, you know, several years, you lost a fight, and you know, so what do you have to say? You know, it's like, I wouldn't even bother. Now, I do think it's very viable to ask about, you know, what happened since your first loss, you know, what went wrong, things like that, which she's never really addressed. But either way, you know, you go in a position on a show like that, you should be able to answer the questions given. But I do also find it very interesting the way that Brock Lesnar was treated versus when he was there, as compared to Rousey, in the sense that nobody would dare, you know, everyone kind of knew what you couldn't ask Brock, whereas with Ronda, they just asked her. Because I keep thinking that, like, you know, I know Brock, you know, a little bit, and I know Brock well enough to know that, you know, you ask Brock that same question the same way they asked Ronda, he just gets up, takes off his mic, and walks away. You know, Ronda sat there.
Well, maybe next time they'll know better.
What?
Maybe next time they'll know better.
Yeah, but Ronda's just stewed, and I don't think she came off. I mean, Brock wouldn't have come off well doing that either, don't get me wrong. He'd come off terrible, but, you know, Ronda didn't come off good either.
So, I've got a couple of topics over the last couple of days I want to get your thoughts on. So, last night on NXT, they announced that they're doing the Ciampa Gargano unsanctioned match
right
at the TakeOver show. And this is not NXT's fault, but I was talking about this in the opening segment. I mean, the way the timeline goes, it comes across like they totally got scooped by SmackDown and they're copying their idea.
In what sense?
It's the same stipulation. It's the same stipulation as Sammy.
Oh, in the sense that if he wins, he gets to come back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then you're right. Especially since they're the ones who actually planned it a long time.
Yeah, they planned it first, but the way the timeline went, it looked like they're just copying an idea from the night before.
Which may have, you know, that is interesting because obviously with SmackDown, I mean, they had this idea months ago, and with SmackDown, because of the Daniel Bryan situation, I mean, legitimately, nobody knew. I mean, there are ideas of what they could do if he was cleared, but they didn't even know the match until, you know, last Tuesday morning, you know, 9 days ago.
So I presume that, I mean, anything can happen, but I'm skeptical that Gargano is losing two Loser Leaves Town matches in a row. So I guess seems like the idea of bringing him up isn't happening right now.
Well, he's better off in NXT for the short term because he's super, super over there. But if he loses and comes up, you know, I don't know. I mean, I know they're trying to revitalize 205 Live, but it's still a death sentence for everybody on there as far as, like, you know, your what's it called? The most you can get is it's very low, you know, whatever. The ceiling is very, very low if you're on 205 Live as far as being a star. So, but there's still more money in 205 Live on that main roster than there is in NXT. So, I mean, financially, he'd be better off. But.
And it is a better show now. It's not all about Enzo. They're letting the guys work a little bit more. The storylines are better.
The matches are great. The promos are great. But, you know, as far as, like, the audience, you know, last week's numbers weren't particularly good, and the crowd heat, it's you know, you have to have a 4-star-plus match to for the crowd to even care, and you know, you can't count on every match being 4-stars-plus.
A question the other day, I mean, obviously we pretty much have every match for WrestleMania, but somebody was wondering about the 3-way SmackDown tag title match. If there's any chance they're going to maybe add a stipulation, a ladder match, a TLC match, anything like that.
I haven't heard. I mean, they always could do something on the last week, but I haven't heard anything like that.
What are your thoughts on Randy Orton as a Hall of Famer?
I think Randy Orton's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the biggest stars of the last 20 years. I know some people will say there's different levels of Hall of Famers. You know, there's the Steve Austin level, you know, where it's like No-Brainer or The Rock or something like that. And Randy Orton's not that. Randy Orton's the next level up, next level down, so to speak. But been a main eventer for a long, long time, great worker. I know he didn't had, like, when I say great worker, it's funny because generally, to me, like, a great worker is a guy who has phenomenal matches. And Randy Orton has, you know, really good matches. I mean, he's just like, when you watch him, you know, he's at a technical level of what he does well above almost everyone in North America. You know, it's kind of almost Japan level. And you know, it really, it is Japan level as far as certain aspects of his work, you know, as far as, you know, certain snugness and believability and being in the right place at the right time, technical things like that. But he's been at multiple championships, been pushed as a top guy, has not failed in the role, or anything like that, and did draw above average for his push for several years. He is not in the last several years, but it's enough for long enough, especially, and again, you know, he's been pushed as one of the top 3 or 4 guys in the company for a long, long time. Now he's a little bit lower than that, but for years he was pushed, you know, it was really him and John Cena for years and years as the top 2 guys, the way they were pushed. And they were not failures. They were not overwhelming successes, but if you put everything together, to me, he's a Hall of Famer. He's not a slam dunk Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer, though.
I mentioned this on the Filthy Show yesterday, and there's always going to be debate when you are suggesting somebody for the Hall of Fame, unless it's like, you know, a Rock.
Okada. You know, I hope Okada. When Okada comes along in 3 years.
No, I think he'll be first ballot. But anyway, the point of this is, I mean, there was some furious blowback to this suggestion here. There's some people that so violently dislike Randy Orton, they cannot even fathom the idea that he would go into Hall of Fame.
But look at all those championships, all those main events. And, you know, like, if you're put in a top position and you absolutely fail, that works against you. But when you're in a top position for that long and the business is a success and you generally have really good matches, you know, it's like that's In the modern times, that's a Hall of Famer, unless you're going to go in there with the idea that John Cena is the only North American Hall of Famer that we're going to ever have again. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, you can't have that. That's a ridiculous standard.
So the Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant documentary premiere, the WWE statement, we talked about it earlier in the show. I mean, what do you make of this? Do you see this as something where they were thinking of bringing him back and there has been blowback and so they're kind of backing off a little bit? Or did this really get misinterpreted or misinterpreted? What do you make of this?
They've obviously had talks. Just as obviously, there's been consideration of bringing him back for more than a year, probably since the day they took him off. Not right away, probably. It took a long time. Once they took him off, I think that, you know, knowing Vince, he was probably really absolutely furious and wanted nothing to do with him for a while. And then, you know, as time goes on, you know, things soften. But I think that they have no deal. This is my gut from the way everything played out, that they have no deal, and they just don't want people to go to WrestleMania with this idea, Hulk's coming back, and then when he's not there, they start complaining, oh, we watched and we didn't get Hulk. I think that that's what they wanted. I think that's what they're saying. Is it possible that it's all a red herring, like, you know, Ronda's not signed when Ronda was obviously already signed? It is WWE, and it is possible, but my gut is that if that was the case, they wouldn't have bothered making the statement. They would have just let people speculate by telling them he's not, you know, scheduled for any of these activities. Because they never told you Ronda would not be at the Royal Rumble. They just kind of said, well, we're working on a deal, but we don't have the deal done, even though obviously...
Yeah, they never issued a public statement saying that rumors that we
Ronda,
are...
They never said Ronda will not be at the
Royal Rumble.
They certainly never contacted me to tell me, oh, you know, when you're speculating on Ronda, you were wrong. You know, because obviously I did speculate, you know, that WrestleMania, you know, obvious speculation that WrestleMania would be good to bring him back, that SmackDown needs a general manager. I don't know if that's the right spot for him, but the people would accept him in the spot. I know that there are sponsor issues, which I completely get, and ultimately that's the decision is when, you know, and it's like the thing is, you know, when is he free and clear? And it's really hard to say because, you know, they don't want to move a situation. And you can't defend what Hogan said. It's one of those things. It's like you can't defend it no matter what. So Hogan's in a weird spot, yet at the same time, you know, I think the fans would accept him back. But if a sponsor goes, hey, look at what he said. What are you doing putting him in a prominent position? They can't say, oh, well, we didn't know. Oh, you know, it's like you got to err on the side of caution when it comes to stuff like that.
So I just got a message right here that yesterday the WWE app sent out a push notification stating that it was going to be a TLC match for the SmackDown tag titles, but it was quickly deleted. So it was either...
Maybe it will be and it'll be announced next week then.
Yeah, either it was a mistake or it'll be announced next week or something
that. So, yeah, it probably is something where... no, what day did they do this? It was yesterday?
Yesterday.
Okay, so it's probably
Wednesday.
Maybe the idea is... It was on Tuesday... And they deleted it. It may have been like a change of plans on that day, which happens all the time. But if it's Wednesday, I think that it may be someone goes, hey, we should do an angle on TV to do it rather than just throw it up and announce it this week. You know. But we'll see. We'll see Tuesday. I guess that's obviously a possibility.
I believe we may have Josh Matthews here on the line. Josh, is that you?
Hey, I'm here. Sorry.
Hey, no problem. What's going on?
I was getting a tutorial on how to go live on Twitch, and it went longer than I thought.
Oh, man. Well, what's going on with Twitch?
Are we live right now?
Yeah, we're on the air, buddy.
Oh, how's everyone doing?
We're doing very well.
Well, what's going on with Twitch is that if you've looked at ImpactWrestling.com, you've seen that we are going to be very ambitious with our Twitch schedule. We're going to be live Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday on Twitch, and they sent me this fly pack thing. It's got like 400 modems in it. Cameras, and I was on the phone with them, and we were at a Google Hangout deal, and they were teaching me how to use the actual stuff that was in the backpack, for lack of better words.
So when you say that we're going live, I mean, this is over WrestleMania weekend, and for those that are unaware, I mean, explain everything that's planned with Impact Wrestling and Mania weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We get started on April 5th, which is Thursday. And then, of course, April 6th is the big event, Impact Wrestling versus Lucha Underground. We are looking forward to that. It's going to be an incredible night. But around everything that's happening, we're going to be live. We're going to be live on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/ImpactWrestling. It's called IRL in real life, and you're going to see the stars and knockouts of Impact Wrestling. Literally, we land, Sanjay and I land Thursday. mid-afternoon, and we'll start a podcast. It'll be a video-style podcast that'll get started at 8 Eastern. We'll go to 10. We're going to go to Wally Mania with Moose. We're going that Thursday, Friday. We're going to get started at, like, super early in the morning with Eli Drake. We're going to go to the gym. We're going to go to WrestleCon. We're going to do the signing all day Friday. We're going to do a pre-show for Impact versus Lucha. We're going to do the VIP for Impact versus Lucha. Then the actual show will be streamed on our Twitch channel. Then we'll do a post show. Then we're going to spring break. And I think by that point it'll be 2 a.m. And then we'll get up Saturday morning and do it all over again. And then we'll do more on Sunday. So you guys, if you're not going to be in New Orleans for WrestleCon weekend, the best way to experience it would be on Twitch on our Impact Wrestling channel.
Now, we've had a lot of guests from Impact over the last month or so, actually, corresponding, I might add, with the increase in the ratings, also the end of football season. But everyone who has been in the business for, like, any length of time, and you started 17 years ago, I believe.
Oh, my God.
Yes, yes. The question I've asked everybody is, how do you find it bizarre working for Impact Wrestling today and seeing such a massive change in the business, where when you began, it was a very isolationist business? Like, you worked for your company. You barely acknowledged any other companies, if you acknowledged them at all. There certainly weren't guys going back and forth. You certainly weren't doing Impact versus Lucha Underground shows. You weren't having guys come in, go to different promotions, champions showing up in Ring of Honor. Is it bizarre to you to see this change?
I just think it's the world that we live in now. In general, it's gotten a lot smaller in the sense through social media and all the different avenues and all the different ways that you can now be connected to each other. And the wrestling world did feel completely separated. Like, when I worked for WWE for as long as I did, you were in a bubble. And we didn't ever acknowledge or mention Impact Wrestling. It just wasn't something that was done. It wasn't the practice. But with Impact, I think we're kind of exploring those boundaries and really just, you know, Impact versus Lucha Underground, when that came out, it was like, okay, this is going to be awesome. And just all the different things and looking at our different social medias, you know, we have an Impact Wrestling UK page, and that page has been blowing up with promotions in the United Kingdom that they would like to see us work with. So it's all this different feeling now. And as long as, you know, I told this to Mike Johnson last week, as long as everything to me is on the up and up, like, why wouldn't we all work together to try to, you know, kind of just raise everything up a little bit?
Your transition from a wrestler to a commentator to an announcer, I mean, looking back in 2001, I mean, at your size, I mean, there were not a ton of opportunities for somebody, but today it's absolutely completely different. I mean, do you ever think, man, I wish I'd been 21 today and I would go full bore into wrestling? Or are you more happy now being an announcer, something that you can do until you're like 100 years old? I mean, what are kind of your thoughts on wrestling versus announcing in your own career?
Well, I have no regrets with the decisions that I made and the choices that I made. I mean, I could have continued to pursue being a wrestler when I was 20. The opportunity presented itself to be an announcer. You know, MTV had approached me to be a VJ. Those were still a thing when I was 20 and 21. So, you know, the hosting world was sort of like there for me, and it was there for the taking. And when WWE offered me a job to be an announcer, that was my full career. That's the only thing I ever thought about. I never thought about wrestling. It just didn't enter my brain for a long time. I've never regretted the decisions that I've made to be an announcer. And now in the era that we're in today, it's like the position that I'm in, the announcing is such a small part of my job that I get to explore all these different avenues, like digital media and digital marketing and marketing of our show and all of these different areas, that I think has made me more rounded than I would have been had I just stayed as an athlete. And if I were 21 today, I think I would be more inclined to maybe try MMA. It's something that I think it's a genre that I'm attracted to. You know, wrestling will always be my first love, but I think if I were a kid, I may want to try my hand in mixed martial arts.
Have you done any sort of training?
I did when I was younger, in my teenage years. I mean, the facilities weren't around like they are now, the training centers. But I did Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu when I was a teenager, as I was thinking, okay, what can I do to be a great wrestler?
All right, well, stand by. We actually have to do a break, so stand by. We'll be back in just a moment with more Wrestling Observer Live. back in the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Josh Matthews of Impact Wrestling joining us here today. We apologize for the short interview. We'll make it up at some point. Tonight on Impact, Pop TV, 8, 7 Central, Austin Aries, Matt Sydal, Impact Champion versus Impact Grand Champion, Bobby Lashley versus Brian Cage for the first time ever. It'll be a slobber knocker. Eddie Edwards, Sammy Callahan, Sue Young debuts, and Suicide, Petey Williams versus Taiji Ishimori versus, actually it's a four-way, I apologize for that. And Josh, let's get some plugs in here for yourself, Impact, and everything else.
Sure, you can follow me on social media, Real Josh Matthews on Twitter, and Josh Matthews on Instagram, 1T in Matthews, Impact Wrestling on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, use the hashtag Impact on Pop. Tonight's double main event, big show, can't wait for tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central.
And once again, how do people check out the Twitch feed for next weekend?
Twitch.tv/Impact Wrestling. We will most likely have a link. Not most likely. We will have a link on ImpactWrestling.com that'll take you right there.
We are back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And hey, he's back, the Doctor of Lucha. Short segment here today, unfortunately, Steve, and we haven't had a chance to talk Lucha for a long time. I don't want to spend too much of your time, but I know that you have some memories of Matt Cleary.
I do, as a matter of fact. The last time I went to a WrestleMania in New Orleans, which would have been 14, was not the one the last time, but the one before that.
Yeah.
We went to WrestleCon with Matt and myself and the Frenchman, Céliane Varini. We went to WrestleCon together and hung around with Kurt Angle and other people who have strange looks in their eyes. Had a ball, having a big discussion as to where we wanted to go out to eat afterwards, and I convinced them to go to Mother's. Mother's is my favorite restaurant in New Orleans and the state of Louisiana and that area of the world. I just love it. And so I took, you know, the Frenchman there with his French appetite, and he turned up his nose at the whole thing. And Matt and I just had the greatest time talking, going over something. There was a fourth person at the table, and I cannot remember who it was. But we just had the greatest time killing an hour and a half after WrestleCon at Mother's Restaurant in New Orleans, which is a famous restaurant. I mean, it's very well known. So
he was an awesome guy. We'll talk more about him on Tuesday with Craig. Got some songs planned. We're going to do some stuff for him. So that's the story. What's going on in Lucha?
Well, a lot of stuff. In fact, I have to apologize. I don't remember where we left off. I suppose we could knock off a couple of things early.
The 75th anniversary show, I think.
Yeah, if we're going to CMLL, they had their Dos Leyendas. They had a show that had a good match on top and had a fairly strong crowd. In fact, their Dos Leyendas crowds have actually been pretty good the last few years. So overall, it was a business success for the company. They promoted a new star up the ladder. It got as many fans as you're probably going to get for somebody who's in the main event, who's not a singles wrestler. That's Cien Carras' son, Cuatrero. But it worked well. It worked well. And now they are going off to build for their 85th anniversary show in September. And with, you know, just looking at Atlantis, since he's come back from his knee injury, I don't think he's got too many more active years of either active or active at the level that he was before. So I'm wondering if whatever their plans were, if the fact that he doesn't look so good in the ring anymore, that he's not terrible, but I mean he's not what he was, is going to affect that. They had a very good show, and of course the sixth most valuable wrestler in the world was on the show with Dos Leyendas, with Andrade Cien Almas visiting to watch the whole thing. So it was a great reunion for the Ingobernables there.
Do you think that if he's wrapping up this career, Atlantis is going to lose his mask?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I don't know, Brian and Mike. It's a very good question. Some guys like Liz Mark and Kinect just were never, there was no money you could. They just did not want to go away. They were, I guess it was a kind of a mentality in the business that if you didn't lose it, you know, lose it in your prime, you didn't want to lose it later on in life just for a pay thing, that you'd go and be that that person till the day you died. There are others, and the very famous original Rayo de Jalisco is the classic example, who came out of retirement just to get a big check and to drop his mask, even though he's way past his prime. This is back in 1989. So it could go either way. My best guess is that the money would be so large that if they had a Rush Atlantis hair versus mask match, the money would be so large that he would take it.
You know, I got to ask a question here. This is not, I guess it somewhat has to do with Lucha. It's Rey Mysterio, but there have been all of this talk. Rey Mysterio is going to visit WWE's doctor for his torn biceps. So much talk about him re-signing with WWE. And then the Long Beach show comes, and Rey Mysterio comes out and does an angle and basically sets up like three matches for New Japan, one of which would be at the Cow Palace show coming up in July. I mean, it seems like there's two conflicting stories here. What have you heard?
Well, I'm not sure that there is, because I think when WWE needs them is their cycle of business that runs from roughly Survivor Series to WrestleMania. That if they bring him in, they're going to bring him in for that cycle to peak for or to work a match at WrestleMania, and he could work infrequently up to that point in time. Right now they have, they have a very, very strong WrestleMania card that he's not on, and it's hard to say. In the last 5-10 years, they've had a better card. Their ratings are what they are. I mean, the wrestling fans that are left in the world are watching them. So he's not necessarily the person that they're going to need for the next 6 months. I just, in my mind, I think that when they really look for use for him is for something to add to and make special a WrestleMania card, and that they would bring him in, and I expect that he will. I expect he will come back at some point in time when he's healthy, whether that's November, December, January, and work for next year's WrestleMania.
Lucha Underground has been filming, and obviously they're trying very hard not to get...
What promotion? What was that?
Lucha Underground. They're trying very hard not to get spoilers out, and they're succeeding, because I know virtually nothing about this, except there's an old man playing, or there's a young Dario Cueto playing an old version of himself.
A lot of the spoilers, except for the last taping I have seen, I don't recall seeing much, if anything, on the Ultima Lucha 4, or the end of the fourth year season, and they may have ferreted out the person that was supplying most of the information. Now, I have not read this week's Observer due to work. There's been a very heavy week at work, and B, I twisted my ankle, and when I go home, I just want to do nothing and stay off my feet for a while. So
trying to read all them words with that hurt foot.
I haven't done anything. I haven't checked email. I haven't walked over the computer and done anything. I've just gone home and sat.
Man,
are you getting a rascal in one of those like elevator chairs put in so you don't have to walk the steps?
No, not a thing.
If only they had a portable computer. Someone needs to invent that.
Or, I mean, I've got a laptop at home, but I literally, when I get home, my ankle has been throbbing that badly. It's like, do I go to urgent care or not? Do I go to urgent care or not? And I just want to medicate myself and zonk out, if you understand where I'm coming from.
I don't. Mike does. So what's going on with AAA?
So the Lucha Underground, yes, there's not a lot of spoilers going around. I think their show is going to start airing in late May or early June. And... you know, I mean, the big story in the wrestling, in the people who would listen to this, the big story is that the amount of people who are interested in what's going on is so much smaller than it used to be.
You don't say. It's almost funny because, like, restricting the spoilers, I mean, nobody's talking about it. At least, like, in the other seasons, I mean, for the hardcores, like, the spoilers would get out and people would be discussing it and they'd be getting excited. I don't know if one has anything to do with the other. People just aren't excited anymore, but, I mean... what's happening is no spoilers, no excitement. I don't know if they're correlated.
Well, and who gives a crap anyway? When so much is done in post-production and so much is about all the randomness that the non-wrestling portion of the proceedings, I mean, I don't know if it really matters.
I mean, that's a good question. That's a very good question. I know that they have always looked at this as a TV show instead of a wrestling show, and the wrestling is... you know, crucial a crucial ingredient, but it is a show to fit in, you know, with the science fiction theme and stuff like that. And all I really need to hear from the spoilers is that the matches are great and going to be worth watching, and so that's good enough for me. I mean, they didn't seem to ask the wrestlers to do just insane stuff, the Angelico type of stuff they were doing before. But it is Mike, you're right. It is a science fiction TV series that adds this in. It's also got fewer and fewer Mexican wrestlers as characters because they've been having, I think, visa issues, and also, you know, the guys that they want to get from AAA, there just aren't that many good wrestlers in AAA anymore for them to bring in. I know Macias has just quit AAA, and he is, I'm under the impression, and I think he's probably right, that just like Pentagon Jr. and Phoenix, Ray Phoenix, that the fact that he no longer works for AAA is not going to keep him from having future employment of Lucha Underground if Lucha Underground comes back, which I expect it will, for a fifth season. But that's actually kind of big news. He has been associated with AAA for 20 years. He's been a character that they killed off once, literally, by burying him at sea, and then they brought him back as the Messiah, returned from the dead, which is a great story to discuss on a Good Friday.
That's right.
And yeah. he has hung around, and he has won every title and had major matches and had an excellent Triple Mania match against L.A. Park. And he's been better as a worker and more interesting as a worker in Lucha Underground. And I think taking the chains off of him and taking him out of AAA and letting him work independent promotions in the U.S. and in Mexico is going, you know, he'll probably end up making more money per shot and get to not have to do stupid jobs for old wrestlers like he used to.
All right. Well, we're out of time, Steve. I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. We'll have Steve on far more regularly following WrestleMania. And we'll be back in just a moment with Brody King, Wrestling Observer Live. We're back in the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Also joined today by Brody King. Lots of stuff to talk about here today. Pro wrestling, God's hate, and more. Brody, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Brian. How are you doing?
Man, it's Good Friday, and we got to talk about God's hate. The irony of this.
I don't know if you're supposed to do that.
Well, it's too late. Tell everybody about this band.
Well, it is a hardcore band from Van Nuys, California. We started, let me see, it's probably about 6 years ago now, but just a bunch of friends and I just came up with a very heavy hardcore band to tour around and have some fun with, and yeah, it's been pretty good and fun, and we've gotten to do some cool stuff. We got to tour the country a couple times and got to tour in Japan once, so it's been pretty cool.
godshate.bandcamp.com if you want to hear some of these songs.
On Apple Music and Spotify.
Apple Music and Spotify. Apple. There you go. You know, in November, I saw your match with Shane Strickland at Defy 9. I was there, and people raving about this match. You had the opportunity to do an interview with KISW 99.9, the rock station up here in Seattle.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear the interview, but, I mean, did you get a chance to talk music and wrestling on that show?
Brian listens to NPR mostly.
Oh, get out of here. I mean, I do, but...
Actually, my friend Kevin Dyers, he's the DJ on that station. So we've known each other for quite a long time, and he's been a fan of my band for a long time, and we've just always been friends. And then when I started wrestling, he's always been a really big wrestling fan. So it was pretty natural for him to just kind of have me on there and talk about both.
Now, you've only been wrestling for like 2 or 3 years now. And obviously,
yeah, about 2.5 years. I debuted July 2015.
That's pretty crazy, given the matches you've been having of late. I mean, you're already working PWG shows. People were raving about that Strickland match. I know you guys have wrestled many times. I mean, what's the story of your career? I mean, did you always want to be a wrestler? Did you start the band and then get hooked up with some wrestling people and decide you wanted to try it? How did this all come about?
Well, I mean, yeah, the short answer is yes. I've always wanted to be a pro wrestler. I remember when I was like in junior high telling people, you know, when they wanted to be astronauts or firemen, I wanted to be a pro wrestler. But I never knew like the avenues to take to get there. Like, I didn't know that there was independent wrestling or local wrestling schools at all. I grew up about 45 minutes outside of Los Angeles in a place where there is no independent wrestling or wrestling schools. But when I was about 27, so this was almost 5 years ago, my bandmate, Colin Young, he met a wrestler, a former wrestler, and the guy basically was like, hey, if you ever want to have a couple private trainings or whatever, you know, I'll show you some stuff, see if you like it. And he took him to the Santino Brothers dojo in Southgate and showed him some stuff, and they took some pictures, and I saw it, and I was like, all right, how do I do this? Where do I sign up? And I pretty much signed up the next day.
You know, it's funny. If you're in the wrestling bubble, which I think everybody listening to this show is, I mean, the idea that in 2014, 15, somebody can't know that there's such a thing as independent wrestling, it sounds crazy, but I have had so many people on this show where I ask them how they got into wrestling, and they're not that old, and they say the same thing. Like, I was growing up, and I watched WWE or whatever. I never even knew there was independent wrestling. And it seems crazy, yeah, but it's true. This happens.
I knew that there was, like, I knew of PWG, and I knew of, like Chikara for some reason. I guess maybe because of they were, like, one of the more early YouTube viral videos, like the Chuck Taylor and the Ant Colony stuff.
Yeah.
So I knew about that, and I knew about PWG because that was more local in the Valley. But I would always like go on the PWG website just to see if there was like a school or if they had a school, and I could never find anything until later on in my life. But things were working out just fine.
So are you still having the opportunity to do a lot of stuff with the band? Is it kind of hurt that? I mean, you're now touring all over the place for pro wrestling. So, I mean, Chris Jericho, I mean, he's one of the biggest stars in the world, and he manages to juggle it. How are you doing?
I mean, Gotcha was never like a full-time thing to begin with. We are pretty much a side project band to our guitar player Colin's main band, which is called Twitching Tongues. And they tour pretty extensively. So we were always used to like fitting in where we could. And I also have like, you know, wrestling and a job and stuff like that, and everyone else has their own life stuff, but we're just like, you know, let's just do this for fun, and when it becomes not fun anymore, then we'll stop doing it. But it's worked out. We get to do, you know, like a week-long tour here and there, and sometimes I gotta tell the guys, you know, oh, I can't do that, I got this wrestling show, or, you know, vice versa, I can't do this wrestling show because I got the tour. But it hasn't clashed yet, and we've kind of just been playing it by ear.
Are you not the lead vocals?
I am.
It's very difficult to replace the man who does the lead vocals.
Yeah, I think if that ever became the case, then we probably just wouldn't be a band anymore.
Sure. Now, as someone who was a wrestler but never was in a band, I mean, it seems to me that the lifestyle of a wrestler and a dude in a band, aside from taking bumps, seems like it's pretty similar. What are some of the similarities and differences between wrestling and being in a band?
They are almost exactly the same, down to like how you get yourself booked and how you get yourself over. They are pretty much the same, which is why I felt like I kind of had an edge up coming into wrestling, because I saw the parallels and you know, kind of just worked it like I've worked the music career. So that was very easy for me to adapt into my wrestling career.
Music may be the only other place that's got shadier carnies than the wrestling business.
Who knows?
that is for sure true. Yeah, like there's definitely times where the promoters, I would say it probably happens more often than in wrestling, where the promoter tries to stiff you and pay or whatever else And but there's less rules in music. Like, there's definitely been times that we've taken promoters to the, you know, ATM and made them fork it over no matter what.
Take them to the woodshed.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, do you think that maybe part of that is because, I mean, promoters stiffing wrestlers, I mean, it used to happen all the time. And it does still happen today, but it happens less today because now the pro wrestling social media world, like if you stiff a wrestler or if you're a promoter that stiffs a bunch of wrestlers on a show, like everybody in independent pro wrestling knows. And I mean,
you're on blast.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's the end of you, but I mean, that's, I mean, it's much harder. As far as like an independent band, I mean, you're just going to different venues. I mean, do you think maybe, what is the social media scene like in music? And do you see that kind of thing happen like it happens in wrestling?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the problem is that with music and with, like, you know, punk and hardcore, the genre that we play in, a lot of the times you're dealing with people, it's not their profession. So you'll be dealing with some kid who's in his early 20s who wanted to throw a show for his favorite band, but didn't really understand the overhead of it. And then once he is in hot water, he's, you know, he's already up to his neck and he doesn't know what to do, which is...
Sounds exactly like pro wrestling.
I mean, yeah, I guess it is kind of exactly like wrestling. But with wrestling, you... I don't know. It's just, it's strange. It seems like wrestlers are more tolerant to those people than music people.
How? Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, how do you feel, moving to wrestling a little bit more here, how do you feel in the ring? I mean, it's been 2.5 years, and you've got some really good reviews for a lot of matches. You've debuted in PWG, which, I mean, that's
wrestling
the high
guys
end.
Like MVP, you know?
Yeah. How do you feel? I mean, do you feel confident in there? Do you still kind of feel like you're new?
I mean... again, the short answer is yes. I mean, it's all definitely come on super fast. You know, two and a half years is nothing for something you've been striving to do. But I feel like where I was trained, we were trained with all the... You're not given a match until you're absolutely ready to be out there. You're not. It's not like, you know, 3 months and they throw you out there. It's like we're given all the tools that we would need to be able to have a successful match. And I felt like that was a great fundamental jumping off point and has led me onto the path that I'm at now. And then also meeting people like MVP and meeting people like the people that run PCW and other places, they kind of have taken me under their wing and they've taught me, you know, the right ways to do things and how to properly be a big man in a smaller man sport now. And I don't know, I just definitely had a lot of helping hands that have gotten me to the point that I'm at now that I'm forever grateful for.
Filthy Tom Lawler puts you over as a future star.
He is a machine. I don't know anybody, like, I just saw him, I think it was last month, and he has a cast on his arm from where he broke his forearm.
Yes.
And he was like, yeah, I think I'll be all right by Mania Week. And I'm like, dude, that is insane. Like,
he's bionic.
That is such a crazy bone to break.
And he is. He's working Mania Weekend. It's crazy.
He's a machine. I don't think, there's definitely parts of him that aren't human.
Now, one of my favorite questions for the younger indie guys, newer in the business, who was the first guy where you got in the ring with him and you were like, oh my God, I'm about to have a match with so-and-so?
It was definitely MVP. I mean, I grew up in the, you know, Attitude Era going into the 2000s, and he was definitely a prominent figure in the WWE roster, so I remember watching him a lot, and then now I'm like standing across the ring from him. That was a pretty surreal experience.
Who are some of your influences in pro wrestling? Like, who are some of the guys that when you first got in, you were like, man, if I could be as good as so-and-so, I'd be awesome?
I mean, newer influences, I would definitely say, like, Chris Hero and Luke Harper, like the bigger guys that can move and are more agile. That was always the most appealing thing to me, because I've always wanted to be more than just the clothesline, big boot, big man. And those guys have always been, you know, pushing the boundary. And, you know, like Claudio Castagnoli is another one who's just an athletic freak of nature that can do anything. But the older people that I always admired was, you know, guys like Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen and Bam Bam Bigelow and, like, Dr. Dusty Williams. Like, those are all guys that, like, they just had this aura around of the, you know, the mean big man that was just, like, you just didn't want to mess with those guys.
Yes. How big are you?
I'm 6'6 in boots.
Holy smokes. Holy smokes. You're twice as tall as everybody on the indie scene today.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, stand by. We'll be back in just a moment with more Wrestling Observer Live. We are back here in the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also WrestlingObserver.com. We're going to go to Brody King for some plugs here, but I have got to plug something very quickly. If you go to Brody's Instagram, Brody X King on Instagram, there is the greatest pro wrestling picture I've ever seen of you throwing Eli Everfly across the ring. I am stealing this for the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. I swear to God, this is the greatest picture. Let's get some plugs in for your stuff.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at BrodyXKing. I'm on Facebook at Brody King. And if you're on the West Coast and want to become a professional wrestler, look up the Santino Brothers Wrestling Academy and Joey Chaos.
And what do you got coming up?
Tonight, I am at Limitless Wrestling in Maine. Tomorrow, I'm at The Fest Wrestling in Gainesville, Florida. And Sunday, I'm at the Suburban Fight Club Pro in downtown Los Angeles, which is a no-ring, no-rules bar fight type match.
And very quickly, do you have a bunch of matches over Mania weekend?
I don't, actually. My band is actually playing a hardcore fest that weekend.
Oh, man. Well, that's at least good. You're booked one way or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, check it out, everybody. Brody X King. You can follow him on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, so many other places. Brody, I want to thank you so much for doing the show here today. Best of luck with everything. Hope to see you at Defy sometime soon. And we are completely we're completely out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Mike, as always. Callers and listeners, we'll talk to you next time. Wrestling Observer Live.